Lock him up in the elephant. Ken Hankey, one of the movie critics for the Mountain Express, and you, sir, are...
Justin Souther, one of the other film critics for the Mountain Express.
It makes it sound like there's a third.
Maybe there is.
Well, we haven't met him yet. Anyway, together, we are elitist bastards, and we have, as usual, gone to the movies, and we're here to dissect and discuss that experience, and we're coming to you... Live-ish from where?
The Cinema Lounge.
Oh, yes.
The Cinema Lounge. The Carolina Asheville.
Yes, and where's that?
It's Skyland off Hendersonville Road.
Nobody knows where Skyland is.
Yeah, they do.
No, they don't.
I know where it is.
It's in Asheville.
Skyland.
Asheville.
Skyland. Take a vote.
Listen, write in and tell us whether we are in Skyland or Asheville.
The five of you that listen to this.
The five of you that listen to this, write in and tell us this. Are we going to talk about these stupid movies?
Yes.
It was a grim array last week.
Well, I only saw one of them.
You only saw one, and you didn't think it was that grim, so...
I wasn't expecting much from it.
Well, I wasn't expecting much either, and believe me, I got it.
You deserve it, I'm sure.
I probably do.
Which is the worst of the ones you've watched?
Well...
If you had to pick one that you never could watch again.
Mars Needs Moms. Which actually is technically probably a better movie than Red Riding Moose. But, God knows, I didn't want to sit through it once. I would never want to sit through it again. I'm not 5 years old, and I didn't think it was funny. It has one upside, however. Apparently, when they were looking at the first footage from this, Disney canceled their contract with Robert Zemeckis... Motion Capture Studios, and in so doing, killed the Yellow Submarine remake, which is the best news I've had all day.
Well,
so.
And this movie's pretty much bombed, correct?
Oh boy, this is one of the major. This is the Nagasaki of movies. I mean, this is
too soon, Ken.
What?
Too soon.
I don't think Nagasaki was hit.
It's still in Japan.
You can't make a Japanese show?
No.
Oh.
Or else you end up like Gilbert Gottfried. So.
How did he end up?
He made like 10 Japan jokes on Twitter and got fired from his Aflac gig.
Oh, well.
So.
Was he playing the duck?
Yeah.
Okay.
No right. More.
All right, so I can't make a Japanese joke.
You make fun of the Chinese, don't you?
This movie tanked. It deserved a tank. It was bad. It was dumb. It was stupid. It is entire movie is that premise. Mars needs moms. Or more correctly, Mars needs a mom. And the mom they need is the mom of 9-year-old Milo, who is physically played by Seth Green in motion capture drag, and is then turned into an animated cartoon character. And then some kid you never heard of supplies the voice because, shock, 37-year-old Seth Green doesn't sound like a 9-year-old. I don't really understand how this movie stars Seth Green, but there you have it then. Probably because Seth Green...
You need that vintage Seth Green.
That when he was playing Woody Allen?
No. I'm saying you need that those vintage Seth Green moves.
What are those?
Oh, okay. Him being short, I think.
Well, that's probably why he could play a 9-year-old, but he can't sound like one. His parents should have thought of this before puberty. This could have been taken care of. Anyway, it's all about how you're supposed to love your mom and you're supposed to appreciate her because she could get abducted by Martians and go up to Martian land where they have this device that looks like it's out of Invaders from Mars that's going to extract all of her mom knowledge and be downloaded into their nanny bots. It doesn't matter. It's just bad. It's not funny.
What kind of mom knowledge?
How to make you a good child who eats his broccoli and takes out the trash.
Okay.
Not that I think broccoli or trash seems to be an issue on Mars, especially because they're a segregated society. The only thing they raise are the women. The guys are all dumped into a garbage area where they fend for themselves and grow dreadlocks. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense.
I'm just asking.
Well, now you know.
Get upset.
Why don't you go see it? Watch it. I mean, you have the theater yourself.
That's true.
Could nap undisturbed. Believe me, Red Riding Hood was a hell of a lot funnier.
Why is that?
Well, I don't
know.
Tell
us about that.
Before we go to that, why don't you tell us about...
Way to ruin your segue, Ken.
Oh, I didn't want to ruin my segue, but I you know, it has a flat tire anyway.
So what are we talking about?
I don't know. I couldn't get
Battle
on
Los Angeles.
I got on one of those things, I'd hurt myself. Yeah, Battle Los Angeles, yes.
Which is... It's basically, what did I say it was? It's Black Hawk Down meets Independence Day.
Okay.
It's better than Independence Day.
Is Independence Day the one that...
with Will Smith.
No. Is Harvey Fierstein in that? Yeah. Oh, that's the one where I considered sending Harvey Fierstein a telegram asking him if he wasn't ashamed of himself. Okay.
That was after Mrs. Doubtfire, so... Probably
so he
not.
Already, yeah, I yeah. guess he'd already sold out or whatever, you know.
But,
anyway.
It's standard alien invasion stuff.
What are they after this time?
Water. Which is reasonable. I feel like that's...
Well, that certainly makes more sense
liquid
than...
Liquid water. They don't want to go melting ice caps down on, on the moon or anything. They're just going to go and...
Yeah, that's when they call it ice.
So they just basically get here and start sucking up our water and killing people.
What do they do, raid an Aquafina plant?
No, they go over in the ocean.
Oh, okay.
They're over the ocean.
That's all salty.
Maybe they like that's how they like
okay.
it. I don't know. They did travel across the universe. I'm sure they could get rid
they
of the salt.
They probably can get rid of the salt. That's true, yeah.
So you would think if you could probably figure out how to make your own water.
Yeah, they have to get the surfers out of it, too. I mean, I guess it sure must have
so
sucked some of them
go start shooting them.
Oh, okay.
I guess.
I see. And so, I assume they fail in this endeavor.
Eventually. Or to an extent, I guess. Because they're dumb aliens. It only takes a day to get rid of aliens, and then you're...
Really? Oh, okay.
Usually. Mm-hmm. You've seen these movies before.
Day of the Aliens, yes.
Like 3 days.
Yeah.
Tops, yeah. It doesn't take that long.
It
you just find
a...
their one weak point. They come all this way and they have one weak point.
Well, that's true.
They all do.
What is their weak point, or would that be telling?
Yeah, that would be telling.
Okay.
It's not that exciting either. It's just sort of like, well, that's dumb of you. But it's not as bad as Signs, put it that way.
There's the breakout quote for the studio. Not as bad as Signs.
Yes.
That should be on
it's
all
a dumb
posters.
Action movie, but it moves quick enough to where you... It's entertaining enough. It's fine as a stupid action movie. I see. About Marines. So, there you go.
All right.
That's
I've got. I'll accept that.
The aliens show up and Marines go and shoot at them. That's the plot.
Aliens come to suck up water and then Marines go beat the crap out of the aliens.
Some of the Marines get the crap beat out of them.
That's
so they can have touching moments of dead people and
if you
give
touch
speeches.
Dead people, it's called necrophilia. I don't care what
depends
you say.
On where you touch them.
Oh, okay.
And they can all speak in slogans and so.
Oh, okay. Well,
that's the movie.
It doesn't excite me.
Well, I wouldn't expect it to.
Oh, okay. I guess that brings us to Red Riding Moose Hood. Well, it's bad. It's very bad. It's preposterously bad.
Is it worse than Twilight?
No, it's not worse than Twilight, because at least this looks kind of nice for the most part. Catherine Hardwicke lays off the jittery cam.
No cam gigandet?
No, there's no cam gigandet, and that is a pity. This film could have used a cam gigandet. It's got a couple guys I don't know, that Red Riding Hood, whose name, by the way, is not Red Riding Hood, it's Valerie or something, I forget.
Does it basically follow the fairy tale?
Not really.
So she doesn't go see your grandma?
Well, grandma's in this, who is played by a hapless Julie Christie. Why she said yes to this, I don't know.
Paycheck,
yes, you know.
You know, why is Gary Oldman in this?
I don't know. I'm assuming this is one
of
those.
Made.
This is obviously one of those Michael Caine things where, you know, I haven't seen the movie. I understand it's awful, but it built an awfully nice house. You know, I mean, that's probably probably the whole thing. Why was it made? Because somebody thought that if you remonkeyed Red Riding Hood as a werewolf tale, which it kind of is anyway.
A cross-dressing werewolf, though.
Well, yes, that is true.
Is that?
That is true. The werewolf does just dress up like grandma, or would if we were really doing the fairy tale, but we're not.
So there's no werewolves in drag?
No, and they missed
which
a great
be,
opportunity.
Because yeah. You know? It would well, be the
not,
next...
Not, no,
the, next...
Only, the closest to that is a ridiculous fantasy sequence uh-huh. where Red, for reasons I don't know, except she's not Red, is in bed with grandma. I don't know why.
Okay.
And they have the better to... see you, eat you with exchange. But that's it.
Okay.
I mean, it's... And Miami Steve is over here looking at me like, what? You know, that's because you haven't seen a medieval rave where we have a pantomime Three Little Pigs thing going on. That'll set your toes a-tapping, let me tell you. Anyway, so the whole story here really is... that Red Riding Hood lives in a village made out of Lincoln logs, except they've been pointed on the end for no apparent reason. They have these giant...
That's how you make cabins.
They have giant trees with points. Why?
That's how they made them.
I've seen pictures of Abe Lincoln's birthplace.
Is Abe Lincoln in
points?
This movie? No.
No, but they also have giant trees that have thorns... this long coming out of them.
Are you saying
it's
this
like a kapok tree got out of hand
unrealistic.
And mated with a grugru palm?
So this movie about werewolves is far-fetched, is what you're saying. It makes no sense.
No, it makes no sense. Even as werewolf movies go, this thing makes no sense. But the real plot is that she has a social climbing mama who really wants her to marry Max Irons, I forget what the character's name is, Max Irons, who has a movie career because his father's name is Jeremy, because his family have a better hovel than theirs. That's all I can figure. Since the gentleman that she wants to marry, played by someone with the improbable name of Shiloh Fernandez...
is that their real name or their name
that's
in the movie?
No, that's their real name.
It would be better if that was their name in the movie.
No, it would be, but it's not. I think his name in the movie is Peter, as in Peter and the Wolf. He is but an humble woodcutter, you see. And that won't do for Mom, who is Virginia Madsen, which it may have something to do with the fact that she's married to Billy Burke, and he's kind of like the town drunk. And in any case, her sister... gets killed by the werewolf. The werewolf is normally kind of good-tempered and just eats the animals they leave chained up for him. But for some reason, he kills somebody, so they get all cheesed. Now, they've been dealing with this werewolf for years. They apparently know where he lives. I don't understand that whole point anyway. So they go into a cave and kill a wolf, also getting the blacksmith's son's father offed in the process, which really is immaterial. Although, it kind of does fit a subplot that's going on that explains why a lot of this is happening. Not that you'll care. By the time you find out who the werewolf is, you won't care.
Yeah.
And so, here comes Gary Oldman and his ethnic retinue of henchmen and their giant rolling metal elephant. into town to explain to these good people who have been dealing with a werewolf all this time but know absolutely nothing about it, that when you kill a werewolf, it turns back into a person. And to demonstrate this, he shows the carefully preserved hand of his late wife, whom he killed when she was in wolf form. So
he just has a hand?
Huh?
Doesn't make any sense.
He just has her hand in a box. He cut the paw off the wolf, and then when he got
home... How do we know that she was ever a werewolf? He gets cut some woman's hand off.
No, he cut a paw off a wolf, and when he got home, his wife had a bloody stump.
Why would anybody believe that? They just have...
These are simple people that live in woods with trees with big spikes on
them. They see a hand and you say, this used to be a wolf paw.
Yeah, well, he's a priest, for God's sake. Would he lie?
Yes.
It's not like he's talking to altar boys. Why would he lie? So the villagers decide to have a medieval rave anyway. And, of course, the wolf, a bad CGI, size of a Buick, Twilight-type wolf, comes crashing the party and offs a few people and also has a telepathic communication with our heroine. The wolf is talking to me. Well, of course, nobody else can hear, so they think she's a witch. Anyway, the whole thing is just ridiculous and pointless, but it is pretty funny. You know, I mean, there are some howlers in there, one of which I can't tell you because it's part of the solution.
Unintended, Ken? Yes, it was intended, but entirely
accidentally so.
All right.
But I'm sure my subconscious knew what it was doing when it went there. But, you know, I mean, it does have lock him up in the elephant. Now, you don't get a line like that every day. And Gary Oldman gets to say it. Miami Steve wants to know if I recommend Red Riding Hood. Emphatically, no. However, it is funnier than Mars Needs Moms. And actually, there are probably several good drinking games you could, or, if you took a shot every time Amanda Seyfried expressed emotion by having her mouth hang open, you'd be drunk by mid-movie. Trust me. Well, Cedar Rapids, which is a movie that we thought was opening last Friday, but is going to open this Friday, is such a breath of raunchy R-rated fresh air by comparison to the just bad movies that we have been being inundated with, that I'm delighted to say that it is finally opening. I saw this a couple weeks ago at a press screening. They dragged my ass out of bed at 9:30 in the morning to see this. Actually, they dragged me out of bed a little earlier than that because I had to be here by 9:30 to see this movie. I don't really have an opinion on the lead, a man by the name of Ed Helms, who I believe is a television personality, and who, therefore, as far as I know, I had never seen before. Anyway, Cedar Rapids is a really... It's raunchy, don't get me wrong. It's R-rated. It's very R-rated. It's extremely R-rated, in fact. But it's not mean, and it's a story of an innocent being corrupted, or at least being exposed to the world. The innocent in this case being the Ed Helms character, who, when the head insurance agent at his agency in some small town in Wisconsin, has an untimely death due to kinky sex asphyxiation, he's called upon to go to the big city of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and represent the company. Instead, he falls in with the one person that he was warned not to fall in with, who, of course, is John C. Reilly, and a woman of dubious morals, played by Anne Hesch, and things go catastrophically wrong that are cleverly set right by the end of the film. It's probably best if you don't know a lot about the film when you go in, so I'm not going to give you, many more details than that. Sigourney Weaver is in it. She's very good as... she, at the beginning of the film, is kind of whom the Ed Helms character thinks is his girlfriend. She was his teacher when he was 12 years old, And he, you know, he wants to know things like, were you attracted to me back then? And she says things to him like, you were 12. But he thinks that this relationship means something, whereas it's the fact that she's an unmarried woman for the first time in 20-odd years, and she's really just enjoying herself. So she's actually delighted that he goes up there. But, I mean, it has things like it's got the hooker with the heart of gold, except she really is a hooker. And probably the funniest line in the film is when she explains to Ed Helms that she definitely loves him and what she offers because of that. It's the second film of 2011 that I can seriously recommend, with Drive Angry 3D being for trash amusement purposes, unless you're too fussy like some people.
Shit to do, man. It's been 2 hours on that.
Yeah. The Thursday Horror Picture Show this week. Where's it at? I don't know. Where?
I asked you.
It's
at the Cinema Lounge.
It's in the Cinema Lounge, right, the screening room, right where we are now. Yeah. 8 o'clock on Thursday. Yeah. That's where it is. What is it?
We show horror movies.
Well, calling Alejandro Jodorowsky's Santa Sangre a horror film is probably doing it a disservice and confusing the public. It is at least partly a slasher film, but that doesn't really happen until about an hour into it, at which point it has one of the most disgustingly graphic knife murders you will ever see. It has a lot of other things in it, too. It's surreal. It's outrageous. It was originally rated NC-17. They finally gave up that rating so they could put some stuff back in it, which is the version that we have, which means it's harder than an NC-17. It's a film that I don't want people coming to thinking that they are seeing a classic horror film. They are seeing something that is possibly going to upset them. I don't know how you feel about seeing children with Down syndrome being taken on an outing where they're allowed to sniff cocaine and look at strippers. I don't know how you feel about crucifixion imagery surrounded by chickens falling from the sky. I see how some people feel about that. And, I mean, the film is how you feel about, a funeral for an elephant. Especially when it gets dumped into a pit and the starving people of the town break into its coffin and start eating it. It's a very transgressive film. At the same time, it's also perversely funny. And I don't think I really realized that until I went to get frame grabs from it. Because there are things in there that are really hysterically funny if you have no taste whatsoever. And since I have no taste whatsoever, I thought they were hysterically funny. So, come see...
Did you LOL?
I never LOL. We'll discuss this later. In
so
any case,
hilarious. You get some LOLing, maybe some rolling on the floors.
No, there was no rolling on the floor, and my ass is still attached. So there. Anyway, you should come if you can take it on Thursday night, and if you can't take it, you should walk out, and that in itself will be proof that the film has some kind of power. Now, this coming Tuesday, Justin was going to see his first Fred Astaire Ginger Rogers movie, which is The Gay Divorcee, which we are showing at 8 o'clock. I am showing at 8 o'clock in the Cinema Lounge at Carolina, which is where we are currently. And if you've never seen a Fred Astaire Ginger Rogers movie, this is a good place to start because it was their first starring vehicle. It has the first ever Oscar-winning song, because it was the first year they gave an Oscar for Best Song, a thing called The Continental.
You mean it wasn't Randy Newman?
No, it wasn't Randy Newman. It's a song called The Continental.
By Randy Newman?
No, by Con Conrad and somebody whom I can't remember.
Randy Newman?
No, it was not Randy Newman, for God's sake. His father was still composing the damned...
Randy Newman has
Fox
won every
logo.
Oscar for Best Song.
Yes, well, no.
Except for that year Eminem won. I'm going to make a director's cut.
Except for the year.
I'm going to make the director's cut of this movie with all Randy Newman songs.
Oh, God. You realize the Continental in this movie runs about 17 and a half minutes. Now, can you imagine a Randy Newman song that runs 17 and a half minutes? Can you imagine what the torment that would be?
Just string them together. It's the same song.
Nonetheless, Justin is not going to do this because Justin is not even going to be here.
So I'll be re-editing this film with Randy Newman songs.
And we won't be showing it, so, you know.
That'll be next month.
Anyway, it's a splendid...
My masterpiece.
You're on thin ice already.
The Gay Newman.
Yes. Anyway, that's what we're showing on Tuesday. It will not make you walk out. It will not offend you.
The Randy Newman songs.
The Randy Newman version would make you, but this is not the Randy Newman version.
It would be much more disturbing. We can save that for the horror night.
Yes.
What's the premise of the gay divorce act?
A bunch of stupid plot that is designed to allow you to showcase musical numbers with Fred and Ginger. No, actually, it does have a plot, and it's he is, of course, a dancer. He happens to be friends with he's actually met Ginger Rogers in one of those meet cute moments that movies, you know, engineer, where her dress manages to get caught in a steamer trunk, and he tries to extricate her, and of course tears her dress, and makes him fall in love with her, but it doesn't seem to do that for. You know, on her side. So he has to loan her his raincoat. And then he gives her his address, hoping that he will see her again. And instead, she just sends the raincoat back. And so he wanders around London in a 1934 vintage MG looking for her, but not finding her. However, it turns out that his friend, Egbert Pinky Fitzgerald, played by the inimitable Edward Everett Horton, has been left in charge of his father's law office, and he gets a client, and the client is brought to him by an ex-fiancée of his, played by Dithery Alice Brady, and Dithery Alice Brady happens to be Ginger's aunt, and Ginger is in need of a divorce. So he sets her up with a correspondent to be found out. This is in 1934 in England, and in England, in order to get a divorce at this time, there had to be infidelity grounds. And so the idea of hiring a correspondent to be found with you in flagrante delicto by your husband or by detectives was very common. It was not, you know, an unusual thing. Complications and confusion ensue where Ginger, of course, ends up thinking for a time that Fred is her hired correspondent and not Rodolfo Tonetti. He prefers spaghetti, played by Eric Rhodes. So, I mean, that's the plot. It's as good as it needs to be to get the movie from musical number to musical number. And some of it's actually pretty funny. So, but it's the musical numbers that you're there for when it comes down to it. Well, let's see. Upcoming this week, of course, we have Cedar Rapids. And what else we have?
Paul.
All right, so we have Paul, which is interesting looking. That's the... Greg Mottola, I don't know how you pronounce it. Film from the Nick Frost, Simon Pegg screenplay, starring Nick Frost and Simon Pegg, but with the voice of Seth Rogen as the alien Paul. They play a couple of comic book nerds who team up with an alien outside of Area 51. Hijinks ensue. And what else is there?
There's Limitless.
Limitless, yes, which kind of sounds vaguely interesting.
Possibly.
Well, Neil Burger's The Illusionist was at least stylish. I wouldn't call The Lucky One stylish, but then again, six people on Earth saw The Lucky One, so that means little to almost anybody. I like Bradley Cooper well enough. It's about a guy who gets a hold of some kind of drug that allows you to use 100% of your brain. Which in some cases probably wouldn't improve things much, but in his case, apparently it does, and allows him to become some kind of whiz-bang, hyper-successful person. Of course, there are downsides to the use of this, not the least of which is there are people after him for having it. There are people who have pinned a murder on him, and all the other sort of complications that you need in a thriller of this sort. However, it is said to be extremely stylized, stylish, and quirky. So I'd say it's got a good maybe factor going right. for it. Now and then there is the Lincoln Lawyer.
With Matthew McConaughey.
Yes.
As a lawyer.
Which could, if special effects were not what they were, or that they are, it could have answered the question as to whether Matthew McConaughey and Josh Lucas are indeed two separate people. But you could put them in the same frame and I wouldn't know the difference. I have to see them in real life together before I'm going to buy that they are not indeed the same person. It looks like an okay courtroom thriller
right.
about Matthew McConaughey working out of the back seat of his Lincoln Town Car as a low-rent lawyer.
Low-rent something,
yeah. I mean, I like the publicity stills for the film, which show him, you know, being all badass by roughing up John Leguizamo. Now, how hard is that? So, I don't know, but that's what we have this Friday.
All right, sign off.
I guess that's it.
You had enough?
Yeah.
You still Justin Souther?
Mm-hmm.
You still write movie reviews for the Mount Express?
Yep.
Are they still the fine folks who allow us to do this?
I think so.
Uh-huh. Well, there you have it. That much is true. I'm still Ken Hanke, and all the other stuff applies.